Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, Season 6, Episode 127. Let's start another design studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Koller, Nolan Hames, and Sander Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Koller from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California, and we're going to shake things up on this episode. For the past 5 years, 126 previous episodes, we've introduced ourselves, then talked about what's happening in our studios, and then we go on to some news and other stuff. Well, this episode, we're going to introduce ourselves with a quick hello and what's happening, and then we're going to get right into the topic here. So let's give this a try. And you know what? I'll start it off. For me, you know, I said, hi, I'm Troy. It's been an Amazon UPS week. We're gearing up for some upcoming events. And it's that's an unintentional pun. We're gearing up because I have been receiving gear left and right. Lori is just pretty much tired of Amazon and UPS packages having my name on them. Lots of new toys, lots of new stuff. And for everybody listening, we just tried a new microphone. I won't list it, but it failed. It was delivered yesterday. I was like, I'm going to try this new toy. So I'm not sure if it's the microphone or the XLR interface, but I will work that out, guys. I'm back to my legacy microphone here. Couple of new laptops, pretty excited about those, you know, because everybody should order at least 10 laptops at a time. And then in the category, this is really fun. So in the category of things they don't teach you in school, I think this should be like a new segment. Our youngest daughter graduated college last week. So that is a year ahead of schedule. COVID has been positive because she just plowed through classes, but they're looking for TVs for their first apartment. And they said, you know, our cabinet, you know, the media area is got, is 40 inches wide. So we're looking at 40 inch TVs. And I had to explain that monitors are measured from angle, you know, lower corner to upper corner, so they can create marketing numbers that are bigger. And she's very excited because now she can get a 50 inch monitor, you know, TV. So it was, you know, life skills that are not taught in school. And then I got one last one here because Sandy, I know you just visited with your son and Lori and I just yesterday. I'm a little tired out today. We spent all day. We got to be in San Diego to watch the Teddy Roosevelt aircraft carrier come into the San Diego port. And we got to see our daughter for the first time in a little over 6 months. So they just got back from deployment. It was a great, great day. And so, yeah, I've done a couple of family things recently. How about
that
you guys?
Nolan? That gets me verklempt to know that you got to see your daughter. You know, I don't know if that's the right word. But
I'm going to have to go look that up. Hold on.
Yiddish. Yiddish is fine.
Yeah, that's my good. Little Yiddish that I know.
Anyways, yes, there's my intro on what's happening. What's up with you guys?
Yes, they should teach how to do your taxes and how to measure TVs in school. The two big things. I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey. And it's template season here for some reason. They're just pouring in, which I usually only do a couple of year, but I've got three I'm juggling right now. And I also just started officially experimenting with Ecamm Live, which I should have done a long time ago. But anyway, it's Mac software. It's similar to OBS and Sandy's favorite. But it's Mac only. But it allows for broadcasting and overlays and layout presets and camera switching and a whole lot more. But the problem is there's so many ways of integrating it into Zoom and other platforms that it's just taking some trial and error to get some best results. So if anybody has been working with it for a while, let me know. Drop me a line. But I'm having fun with it so far. Sandy, how about you?
Well, welcome to the Presentation Podcast, everyone. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz, and I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's been a speaking kind of week for me, or it will be. I just spoke at a United Health Group event yesterday. I have another engagement tomorrow with the National Association of Government Communicators. And of course, I'm on the podcast right now. It's fun to be in front of everyone. It's very interesting to experience the differing, what do I want to call them, conference platforms. I have to tell you when you jump from one to the next. But anyway, our colleague Richard Goring is also presenting at the NAGC conference. So
it's
not offered to everyone, but it's really fun to see a colleague there. on the other front, I'm building a slide library for the incubator project I'm part of. I'm setting up training. I'm setting up templates. I'm setting up training presentations. You know the spiel. It's a lot of the same.
That is awesome. Okay, let's jump into our topic. Iconography. It's a noun, the visual images and symbols used in a work of art or the study or interpretation of these. Hey, icons are a mainstay in visual design, and they're a natural fit for presentation design. Today, we're going to challenge each other with questions about how we use icons, how we see others using icons, where we source icons from, and where icons should and should not be used. Just fair warning, this is a fairly geeky designer conversation that only designers will probably appreciate. And I had so much thing, and I had so much fun thinking about my answers to our questions. So join us and let's go into iconography. Okay, let's start it off with this, guys, because I just want to, let's start by defining icon. You know, is it vector art? Is it stickers? Is it wayfinding? Is it symbols? Tell me what you guys think of when I say, Nolan, add an icon to the slide.
Add an icon. Well, first I want to say we just finished Creative Pro Week. That was last week. We all, Troy, you and I spoke there. And one of the great sessions that I remember was Vaughn and Savannah Glitcha. They're icon and logo designers, actually father and son, really cool. They're like two of my new favorite people, but they gave a session on designing icons and logos. And at about every 10 minutes, they would say, so this is it an icon or is it a logo? And the answer that everybody kept saying was it's both. So, all right.
Interesting.
Well, yeah. So I'm in that mindset now. But you're kind of hitting me with a head scratcher right up front. I don't know my definition. An icon is a symbol representing something else. Is that sort of a macro? So an icon can be lots of different things. Is that the taxonomic larger class that everything
else? I've got a
whole
discussion about symbols too. As a symbol, anyways, we're gonna see that for right now.
What do you think?
Well, this is me. I think of an icon as a single object that represents an idea, kind of like a glyph. Think of it this way. An individual hieroglyph as an icon where, for example, the wavy horizontal symbol that we see that represents water. Mm-hmm. It's the same with icons. The individual glyph is an icon and the series of glyphs creates a story, kind of like a hieroglyph infographic.
I didn't think we were going to go back to Egypt because, right?
Yes, I'm thinking about that.
Hieroglyphics, those were icons basically, right?
Yes.
Which of course, you know, devolved or evolved into letter forms, which.
See, right, there you go. And there's part of my discussion. Is a letter form an icon? Because everything is an icon or a visual symbol. Hey, I just wanted to start this as an opener to see how much we agree or disagree on what an icon is, how much it's going to be fun to talk about this, or maybe we should be cutting the episode short because we'll be yelling at each other soon. I gravitate to...
you just wanted to make sure it was completely geeky from the very start.
Right? Oh, it's such a simple thing. But yet every time I look at something or something, you know, a client tells me what an icon is, and I got a couple examples of these a little bit later, but it's just such a weird topic that it's not cut and dry. I gravitate towards the symbols part of the definition. Mm-hmm. You know, an icon is a symbol, you know, it's not a multi-layered art asset. I'm going to be controversial right up front here. It's not a logo, but a logo can be an icon based. And it's usually, it should be vector art for our needs, just for best practices. Okay. Take us into a new direction. Cause now that we start off on, we don't know what we're talking about concisely.
Well, within this world of icons, let's just talk about style, right? So what are the primary styles and what do you prefer to use when you're inserting an icon? Sandy, what do you see as sort of the styles and what do you go to usually?
I see solid. Mm-hmm. Filled, I guess you could.
Okay, got
describe
it.
Describe it that way. I see line icons, which I tend to use most often currently. Not that I prefer them, but it just seems to be the style that my clients are attracted to.
That's what the kids
right
are
now.
Using these days.
Kids, yes, exactly. There's monochromatic. I guess that's filled, but different shades of the same color, like the Microsoft icons for their products or logos for their products. There's the flat icon, 3D, animated. Yeah, there are animated and then responsive SVGs. And I want to talk about that one a little bit more. I think we should explain what responsive SVGs are.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in a second. Okay. But I think I tend to prefer solid monochromatic ones. I just find them easier to mix and match. And, you know, not to get too geeky about it, I was very excited to see a study a couple years ago put out that looked at the comprehension of solid icons versus line icons. And we'll put a link into it. I think some university did it, but yeah, I read the whole thing. And basically at the end, the result was solid icons are better for comprehension by about, I think it was like 0.7%. So it really a toss up, but I generally find them. I think solid icons work a little bit better at scale, getting smaller. I also find solid icons easier to mix and match when you're pulling them from different places. You don't always get, you know, with line icons, some are different weights, and then some you discover are not actually the lines. They're filled, the lines are shapes, and then that becomes hard to change the line width and stuff on. But anyway, that's generally where I'd go. Troy, what do you sort of default to?
I default to consistency because that is my biggest hang up with icon use in presentations because it's people go and source some or, you know, they have a corporate library and they need another one. So they go grab, you know, they have a solid filled styling and they find one they like that's outlined. I'm like, so I'm going to say I'm okay with outline styling. I think it's probably my most used, but solid is great. You know, as long as things are consistent, you know, if it's an outline one, you have to have a consistent line weight and styling. Yeah. You know, I think people need to be aware that there are even styling options. An icon is not just an icon.
That weight issue, even with the line icon, I've become very sensitive to managing the weights. That's something that most people who use icons don't seem to concern themselves with.
PowerPoint doesn't make it easy for us on the editing front, the way they do, you know, if you want to add weight to an icon, but you add it as an outline, you know, outlines around shape, you know, Illustrator definitely has an advantage here where you can choose where your line weight goes, interior, exterior, centered, which is, you know, and PowerPoint does it different for text boxes and lines. So they make it hard for us to modify within PowerPoint, but the line weight is, I think, critical to keeping a consistent flow. Unless you get too small, and then you got to start considering line weight might be overbearing.
So. Right. And as I said before, sometimes when you bring an SVG in, that's a line icon, sometimes it is actual lines that you can control in PowerPoint. And then sometimes those lines have been expanded into shapes, at which point we run into that, like you can't control it with line width, or you add a line and then you just don't have that control. So if you're designing icons outside of PowerPoint, you're definitely, you know, you want to make sure I'm always using 1 point line width or, you know, 1.5 or whatever you choose for that consistency. So Sandy, the whole responsive SVG thing, is so that for me, that was something that I only learned recently, thanks to Richard at Bright Carbon, that you could make these yourself. But if you go into under illustrations in PowerPoint, so not icons, but illustrations, you're going to see a bunch of illustrations. And they're bi-colored. They're two-tone, and one of the colors uses one of the color chips from your color palette. So basically, even though they show as yellow, if you bring it into your template, it'll automatically recolor based on your color palette. So that's what we mean by responsive. And PowerPoint gives you a whole bunch of those, but you can create those yourself. So in theory, you could create an icon library in Illustrator, you know, program the SVGs in the way you have to, and then bring them in, and then they'll automatically color to the color palette, which is super cool, but it's involved.
I would think in your case then, Nolan, with your preference for solid monochromatic, I guess I interpreted that as variations of the same color. But you did say solid, didn't you?
it'll color in solid portions. I mean, I guess it might color in solid part lines if there's a line in there.
So I'm just saying in that case, having a responsive icon would be the best case scenario in case you wanted to change it to another color.
Well, Well, yeah, I mean, that's if you want to suit towards sort of, I think it works in the sort of two-tone type thing where parts of the icon are, and I've seen some very cool icons with sort of multicolor. I've sort of started playing with that recently. But in general, you know, solid, you're just going to fill it with black or fill it with one color. And that's very easy to do, especially if it's an SVG. But we, we should include a link to that. Bright Carbon has an article on how to create responsive SVGs.
I would love to see it. I haven't seen that.
Are interested? I'll find it. We'll put it in the speaker notes.
Perfect. So this is making me think. Then, when we talk about responsive and line weights and all of that, is there an optimal display size that we should be considering? Minimum, maximum.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I'm not sure I have an answer to it. I, from observation and experience, I'd say solid icons work at smaller sizes. But you know, optimal display, again, we're like in this world of, is somebody viewing the presentation on a 27 inch iMac or on their phone? Yeah. That's, how do you know?
Well, I'm noticing in PowerPoint too, when it gets really small, it almost disappears in normal view, but then it's there in slideshow view. Again, I haven't compared it on different monitors. I'm for one client, I'm working on their corporate monitor, and it's very difficult to see the icons at many points. Mm-hmm. So I would say there definitely is a minimum size, typically in a PowerPoint environment. Troy, what about you?
Icons, I mean, that's one of the beauties, especially for using a vector-based icon. They can be any display size. I think there's practical guidelines of, does it work or does it not work? Sure. But I also got to throw this in there. There's this line of where an icon becomes an art accent element, you know, a big icon accent, like a big question mark, a giant question mark that overlaps the slide size. Mm-hmm. It's really not an icon at that point. And also, I just got into a whole other typography thing, is a question mark an icon? But, you know, it could lose its meaning as an icon, meaning it's a visual symbol to represent something. It becomes an art asset. But I think too small is probably the bigger concern or consideration for visibility and actually recognition.
And in terms of just sizing, this is yet another reason you want to use SVGs, because there are some times where you'll take an icon and maybe make it huge and like ghosted in the background or whatever. And if you're using a PNG, like if you like, you know, we should point out Noun Project, which I know we're going to talk about in a second, recently switched over from inserting PNGs to SVGs. If you use the third party app or the whatever it's called, the add-in in PowerPoint. And yeah, before, you know, if you brought in a PNG and then wanted to make it full size, it'd start to get blurry. But now that's not an issue anymore.
Mm-hmm. That art accent element, that I used to call that super graphic.
I still love them. So maybe I'm living in the past.
I love them. I just used to use them a lot more. I think they're a great design and accent element, as you said.
Who loves them more?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a serious question, because you're not going to think I'm serious at this one. So I'm just prefacing it up front, because a client called this out very, very clearly, saying that the design work we supplied was not correct. Here's the question. Can an icon be a color beyond black or white?
Yeah, why not?
What?
What is it? If it's
we color coded the icons. Yeah. And we were told very clearly that icons need to be high contrast, highly visual, and there is, you know, you either use them in black if you're on a light background, or white if you're on a dark element area. And I was like, well, that could be a rule. I mean, it could be a rule, but of course I scoured through the corporate brand style guide and all their icons in their, cause they had a preset set of icons. Mm-hmm. We took liberties with them. and we created a color coding system for this particular information piece. And we were told, you know, and I actually am serious, you know, so these people viewed icons, and I think it was just because they had a brand style guide that they only supplied them in black and white, but they completely took it out of that. I could not change the colors. And I was like, well, there's a rule I had never even considered, but they had.
Well, All right. It's frustrating.
I can see
client.
It for a brand guideline. One thing, but I don't think it's a, I've never heard of it as being like an accessibility thing, as long as the contrast is sufficient.
Just saying that every time you encounter icons and you think you know what you're doing, somebody has their own spin on it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about sourcing. Where do you get icons from?
You get them from Nolan.
Pretty much Noun Project and iStock and my own local collection, a lot of which originally came from iStock and Noun Project. There are a few other places I go to when I sort of really, really need, you know, something new, you know, for strategy or something like that. Icons 8, Icon Finder, Icons DB. They're simple icons. I think I just, there are a few others that came in. Well, I'm going to put a whole list in the show notes, but you can all, I have another list and I'm always adding to, I've talked about this before, presentyourstory.com/goodies. I have a one page stock resource list and I'm always at it. Seems like every week or so I see some little site out there, you know, like use our 2,500 icons for free, and sort of go for it. Google Material icons. I'll put that link there as well, but those have been free for a while. Yeah. So Google, you know, gives out lots of free stuff, including their icon library or their icon system. And I've downloaded those and put them into my local collection. So I use those occasionally. They're very, very simple, like very straightforward. If you need like a play icon or a, you know, file icon or something like that. But where do you go, Sandy?
Well, I have to admit, I use not most of the time, but I often use the PowerPoint built-in icon library.
Oh,
but
yeah,
seriously,
that exists.
Yeah, it exists. It's a great resource for everyone. Yeah. But seriously, with the Noun Project add-in in PowerPoint, it's just as easy, if not easier, and you get a larger variety with maybe a better search engine. And also, you get the option of buying a specific style, line weight. You can buy kits from artists. It allows you to be really highly organized and consistent in your icon design. And I buy buy kits or whatever they're called from.
I think sticker sheets or something from. Like I get those occasionally from iStock, and yeah, sometimes it's nice to,
yes,
you get like 16 icons, you know, mm-hmm, per
in a certain
file download
category.
Right. So if you're looking for like
category,
medical, yes, or whatever, it's sometimes nice to just use those.
Makes it very easy.
What about you, Troy?
Okay. I'm going to say it depends on timeline. If it's a quick term project or I'm creating a really quick mock-up, I go to the PowerPoint library because they're nice. I don't necessarily think they're my favorite styling, but they're there and they're quickly accessible. If I have moderate time and I need like a family of icons, I leverage Noun Project because you can utilize it right from within PowerPoint so easily. And if I have an extended time frame, it's a bigger project. You know, we're working on a corporate branding element. You know, I need a variety of icons, and you know, I have the time to manipulate them. I'll go into. I use Adobe Stock, so that's our resource, and I find a family of icons to pull from because you can just download, like literally, here's, you know, 300 icons, all the same design element. You can pull from them. But I am going to second Nolan's comment there about Google Material icons. They are awesome. And I've used them not so much for the icons, but we use them as a reference for what do people use for code. Like, I need a code icon. Mm-hmm. So my go-to thing has been to go to Google Material fonts because they have categorized hundreds of the most common, I'll think, app type things, because you know, a lot of apps actually build, it's a Google font. You can build it into a mobile app.
It's fonts.
It's
Google
an actual
fonts.
Well,
no,
in the fonts, it's within their fonts umbrella of how programs recognize them. They're actually icons, but isn't the link you go to, Nolan, within Google fonts?
It's fonts.google.com/icon. So no, they're not font. I mean, that's another place you can get icons. Sometimes there are typefaces that are nothing but icons, and you can actually make use of those, which we didn't really talk about. But no, these aren't. Okay. This isn't an icon. These are individual SVG files.
But they're housed within the Google Fonts
collection
element. Whatever. But I like them as a reference resource because I think that Google's basically set the baseline. Like, here's the standard font for a calendar, or today, mm-hmm, here's, you know, just the icon that most everybody would expect. So a lot of times we get thrown out there with you know, some business options, you know, like trying to think of a good example, not thinking of one right now, but, you know, like card membership, and I'll go look for something like that over there. Anyways, I like it as a resource. I actually don't utilize them a whole lot, but I do use it as a baseline reference.
Troy, do you do any icon management? Do you have, like, how do you keep track of, how do you catalog your icons, or do you?
You know what? I'll hold my process until I hear about both of you. How's that?
Okay.
Because you're going to be blown away.
All right. Well, I use an app I've talked about before called Icon Jar, Mac only, but it's fantastic. I used to have, you know, a series of PowerPoint slides, you know, with different categories and everything. I'd cut and paste, but it was just a mess. So this is an app that helps me categorize and folder icons and just drag and drop, and I can open an Illustrator. It's just I love it. It's like one of my favorite apps. It's called Icon Jar. But yeah, it's unfortunately Mac only.
I know. I was so upset, but when I saw what you were doing with your organization, I truly wanted to do it. I can't remember if it was you or someone else who recommended the alternative Nucleo.
Nucleo app, yeah.
Yes, that's Nucleo app. And For some reason, I remember downloading it and not going very far with it. Maybe I didn't have the time to start getting it started. But this podcast, today's podcast, renewed my interest in it. So I tried downloading it. My Windows does not like it. It seems it sees it as unsafe. But I went ahead with it. I'll do a little research and report back on it to see if I like it as much as I think I like Icon Jar, which I can't use.
Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah. Troy has note cards on a bulletin board.
Nolan is very organized. He's got Icon Jar organized in categories, and it's, you know, it's very resource rich and it's amazing.
By line weight. And
so here's the truth. I actually just gave up on keeping and managing icons. We have no library. There are so many assets and libraries and options out there. It's the same for art assets, fonts, video, audio files. If they're used in a project, keep them in the project folder so we have access, you know, so we have access to them later or for reference. But every project, it's a new set, because with subscriptions, and we have what seems like dozens of them we pay for now, and so many options, I just stop collecting. I'm like, you know what? You know, if I'm in PowerPoint and I need a new set of icons, if the corporate doesn't have one, I'm going to go to Noun Project. I'm going to go find a font family. I'm going to find an icon family I like, and that's what I'm going to utilize. So yeah, nothing at all on the management side. Now, we do manage them on the storage side, so they stay with the project, but that's a totally separate conversation. We have I started clearing, I don't know, this would be, well, earlier in the year, I went through my hard drive and like, why am I using up? So my laptops have 2 1-terabyte hard drives, and I was running out of room. Like, okay, something's getting into a problem here. And I found video libraries, and I found art asset libraries, and we just culled them all out. They're on the server. They're not lost, but yeah, I gave up on the whole idea, to be honest. So I guess I'm anti-organization. Just too many cool resources, other things to focus on.
Well, that's, you know, that's a good point. That's currently my style. I store them by client, but I'm intrigued by the concept of organizing them more creatively. I'm getting fussy about, like I've mentioned several times today, the line weights and everything. And I just think that's a great way, a quick way to access the materials I need.
Well, it does mean when the internet goes down, I'm doomed, because I grab everything per project, but you know, a library would make it so you can continue to be a designer. I'd be back to designing. Here's a question. So you have this library of all these icons, wherever you're getting it from or however you got stored. Where do you use icons in presentation design?
Go. Too many places, probably. I feel like sometimes I go icon crazy. But one of the things, I'm always looking to take bullet points and lists of things and chunk them out. And very often, you know, icons pair that nicely. So if you have a list of 5 bullet points, you know, chunk them out, you know, make them graphic, you know, put them around the page and then pair them with an icon, for example. But the problem becomes you start to do that. Like if you just start going through slide by slide doing that, you're very often you could end up with 100 icons. So you really have to take a step back and say, all right, what are the macro things I'm talking about? Why can't, like, how many slides do I have? Because I can't, if I have, you know, endless sets of things on multiple slides, I just can't keep doing that over and over and use 100 slides in a deck. So that's always a, frustration of just, you just gotta, I mean, I don't know what the right number is of maximum icons in a deck, but I'm sure yeah. I've been guilty of exceeding that that maximum number.
Sometime. Wait, is that like 20, 50, 100?
Exactly.
Depends. You know, yeah. I mean, what do you do?
Like Nolan said, we have to think macro.
Yeah.
What? How many slides are in the presentations? What? How many concepts are there? There's so many things to consider as part of the package.
And you've got
to
see, like, if a deck is constantly talking about, I don't know, hospital, whatever, like that might be a good opportunity to get a hospital icon. So every time that's mentioned, you're doing that. But if it's mentioned just once, you know, maybe not. Maybe that's not an appropriate use.
Troy, how about you?
I am probably icon conservative, especially standing next to Nolan. I like them to have a very reason. I like icons to have a purpose and a reason for being. So, I'm very much typography focused. So a lot of places where icons would be used by a lot of design, SmartArt is going to drop icons in now. You know, there's a lot of things where icons are used. I will probably default more to stylized typography layouts and styling. So I think and I had to really kind of think through this and look at some of my previous projects here. And I think I'm probably icon conservative. Yeah. There's my new phrase. I don't use icons quite as much. I default to more text-based elements, but with that, I like the icons to be consistent. So I'm going to find a set. And if there's a hospital within it, it's going to be a very similar hospital, but they have a manufacturing. Those two icons are going to look like they're going to represent their elements, you know, hospital being more of a hospital-esque and a manufacturing be more of a factory type looking thing most likely, but they're going to be consistent line weights. They're going to be consistent fill if they've got a fill. They're going to be consistent block sizing, you know, what do they fit within? So I'm very, very much focused on that. So I think I'm probably less heavy on icons just overall, because if it doesn't reach consistency, I hate to throw it in there. And I hate receiving those decks where it's like, I've got the mail icon. And you, at one point you'll see the mail, you know, the little, first of all, it's a letter icon, which is kind of funny for anything.
It's an envelope.
Like an envelope. Like, thank you. Yeah. One point it'll be an outline. Another point it'll be a solid fill. And then somewhere else it'll be like the negative space. So, you know, it's the white outline on the white, whatever the background is becomes the outline because it's got a light tint fill. And I just think that is so inconsistent. It creates so many different visual. Now there are, I guess I got to back up here. I guess there are some places where you should mix it up if it's specifically called for, but I don't think I use that many. I couldn't think of a project where I used more than 50 icons in a, big sales presentation. Maybe that would be a crazy,
that
big
would
number
be a lot
me.
Of icons for me.
Is that a lot?
You know, yeah.
I think I'm usually around 10, 12, maybe representational items. Now, there's that whole thing of art accents. I mean, I'll pull icons in and use them as bigger elements and, you know, stylizing things, but they're not an icon. They're an accent element. So that's a whole different ballgame.
Yes. Good point. Well, I think building icon libraries to be used in presentations and templates is a thing that, and I don't see it leaving soon, but I end up using them as often as my client needs them. So I can't tell you if I am conservative or I follow an on-demand philosophy, I guess.
Wait. I got to loop back because you just talked about icon management, Nolan, and Sandy, you just talked about template. I think that's a really valid thing, is icon management with a template. You know, we'll build out a library or we'll set a library and we create a slide or two or three of all these. So they're easily copy paste icon libraries within a template.
Yep.
I don't know if you're going that route, but that is a very, very important element, is that a professional design, I think a template is pretty much the brand style guide for most people, because most people don't get access to the Marcom Brand Style Guide. So we'll make sure not only are the icons in there, but we'll explain and define a few things. Icons are outline based. They have they're all based on a so-and-so weight or a tint fill or a solid fill. You know, we'll give some rules to the icons and then we'll supply them in categories or however they're done.
We do that all the time. I mean, I always offer it to the client, and it basically comes down to two things. Do you want to give us a list of icons or of topics or things that you want icon for, or do you want a general, you know, tech or medical or whatever? And it's always better and more fun when they give, you know, here's a list of the things that, because it also makes them think like, what are the topics we're always talking about? Mm-hmm. I've got three template projects coming up, so we'll be doing that on at least two of them, I think.
Yeah. So I think that's icon management for the end user. And I think that's incredibly, I'm trying to backtrack saying I don't use anything in a template. Yeah, there's a definite need for distributing icons and making them set to go.
Very good point. Do you too find that you're creating custom icons often, or what about sourcing them? I mean, where does your preference lie?
I'm lazy. You know that. So I go to my collection. I go to Noun Project. Every once in a while I will. And it might be, you know, rarely from the ground up. But sometimes I'll do kind of like what Troy was saying, like maybe I'll start with a building, like just like a house, and then we'll put like a little circle in the corner, like one for medical, you know, and then, you know, with the cross, and then a circle with a wrench for, you know, factory, and, you know, we'll sort of mix and match that way. Every once in a while I'll create one. Last year I really needed one for the Hoover Dam, and I searched everywhere. Yeah. I couldn't find it. And so I eventually made my own, and then I submitted it. This is the only thing I've ever submitted to Noun Project. I said, nobody has a Hoover Dam. Use this one. And was like a year ago. And they're so backed up.
It has that word dam in it. You can't look for that.
One day I hope to see it there. What about Sandy? You build, because you talk about building things in PowerPoint, right? I feel like you create them more often than I do, right?
I build them a lot of custom. I'm never satisfied with the ones I purchase, but to that point, I often find myself modifying icons that I purchase. But if it doesn't fit the bill, I'll no problem building from scratch. Of course, I want them to be easily editable, easily recolored. So things like drawing lines using shapes, rectangle shapes in PowerPoint, that's not an easy thing when you can't make your lines really, really thin. So there are definitely limits. And clarifying, I build my icons in PowerPoint. I've never built an icon in Illustrator, guys.
Do you save them out as SVGs, or you just leave them in PowerPoint? Interesting. Okay.
See, and I will import them into Illustrator because that's the format that so many people want them for editing purposes.
Well, but they can edit an SVG, just save it out.
Yes, they can. They can import it. But I often get requests for my clients, okay, can I have them in SVG, EPS, AI, blah, blah, blah. So you're finding, you know, you're providing all those file formats. PNG even.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now we do library kits. That's what we call is library kit. And it's about 60 file format and size combinations and color options. And we have a pretty preset formula for that. We use an awesome Illustrator plugin to categorize all those. Anyways,
how do you create them? Do you create them, Troy? Do you find yourself?
I don't want to sound like a lazy designer. I'm not going to just flat out admit it like some people here, but there are just so many resources available. I mean, in the past, we've created, you know, from the ground up, you know, from blank artboard to full library of icons has been done. And now I rarely create a custom set of icons any longer. There's just great resources out there, royalty free, distributable, everything else. But after finding a great icon set, I do often take kind of like you're saying, those existing icons and modify them to meet the specific needs of the company or the project. Or we'll then develop additional icons that completely match the styling. So sometimes we had a one that was infant care. You know, it was like, how do you represent a baby because they didn't want a diaper. and it was kind of funny. We went round and round. So we already had an icon set. So developed that from the ground up, but it was like a few icons within the bigger set are created. And I generally default to working in Illustrator because that's just my comfort level. But everything has to be vector-based. So actually, maybe I'm rethinking that. The last one I just did, the last set of them, we did all in PowerPoint, all the vector work, exported them out, added them to the assets folder, but they were created in PowerPoint. Maybe I'm leaning more towards the Sandy realm here now that I'm thinking about it. But so no, I don't create from the ground up. I don't think any of us on my team has done that for a while. It's just resources. I mean, there's not a reason to. So wrapping up, the Nike logo. It's an icon, right? Okay, enough provoking for the conversation. this has been super. I mean, I really appreciate our time just being designers talking about design stuff. Icons are important for presentation design, and PowerPoint's expanded, that vector art and SVG capabilities, they really make icon use in design something we can do on a professional level within PowerPoint. And then, what about the Olympic rings? Are they a logo? Are they a brand? Wait, can a brand mark be an icon? Wait, isn't a brand mark just another name for a logo? Is an arrow an icon? A graphic accent?
Okay, well, I know both Nolan and Troy presented and attended the Creative Pro Week Design Conference last week. I believe the next conference with presentation design as a focus is in September at the Presentation Summit. Or is there, can you two think of any others that we should be?
I have the Presentation Summit as my next design presentation designed element.
Yep, okay. That's what I got.
So everyone,
not that far away.
We'll definitely be featuring a discussion about the Presentation Summit in an upcoming podcast. So look forward to that, everyone.
Okay, so in the news front, SlideWise, one of my new favorite PowerPoint add-ins, it just went to non-beta release, I guess what you call it. I mean, it's version 1.0, so it's not the point whatever anymore. Mike and Newpower sent me an email about a few of the details, but this one is timely. The 50% off pricing that they've been having as part of their kind of pre-release, which makes SlideWise $24. It ends June 2nd, which will be the day after this podcast goes live. So if you're listening to this quickly and you don't have SlideWise, we do not get endorsements, but this add-in does a lot of things that PowerPoint has been missing. Just an asset library is what I've been asking for years. And this is
It's become pretty essential for replacing fonts for me. So, speaking of that, so Troy mentioned the 50% off pricing, but Newpower and Mike have given us 5 registration codes to give away to you if you're still listening at this point. We're going to make this super easy. So our previous giveaways, we've asked people to share. To share our posts and repost them and tag us. And we're doing that again, but also we're opening it up to likes. So while we really hope you will actually reshare our posts on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, or give us a hashtag, in promoting SlideWise. If you like it, you will also get an entry, but if you share, you'll get 2 entries. So hopefully your odds will go up that way. So look over the next week or two, we will, be putting that out on social media and we'll let you know about it. And again, we're giving away 5, free licenses for it.
Okay, and then I got one last little news item before we go into pro and tech tips. Modern comments in PowerPoint, which should already be here for everybody, and you may not have even noticed them. So I have a really big workflow of using PDFs and their commenting within it. PowerPoint's comments have been a little behind the times. Well, they've been working on what they're calling modern comments, and they're pretty cool. I mean, they do a lot of great things. They're now interactive. You can at mention people, and it'll let them know not only was there a comment, but like it'll take them to the link of the at mention. It'll take them right to that slide. And there's a lot of very, very positive elements about PowerPoint. And hold on, are they office wide or are they PowerPoint only? Now I'm questioning myself. Anyways, the PowerPoint version of Modern Comments is really nice. It's a huge improvement. There are some gotchas. I'm going to do a blog post series about them upcoming here soon, but they're out here. I would check them out. I'll put a link to kind of a summary of what's out there, because if you don't use comments, you would never find them. I think that's going to be one of the bigger problems for Microsoft, is that you either use comments or you don't. And I think most people don't, because they've been lackluster. And this is a big step forward. So I'm going to throw it out there that everybody should have them. And I'll throw a link so you can kind of take a look at it. Maybe at some point we'll do a conversation about it. Let's jump over to Pro and Tech Tips. Okay, I've got an economical tech tip. And because we're using our recording platform here, we're audio recording only, but it's added video. So we get to watch each other, which is pretty funny. I think all day long this morning, Nolan and Sandy have been watching me mute as I turn and cough, and I just cannot clear my throat all the way. So I'm glad we're not actually really using this, but we do have video. Now, we use throughout our studio, you know, everybody has a webcam in their laptop or an external one. I've got a series of Sony Alpha series mirrorless cameras, and we use those. The nicer lensing, everything looks great, and they're just set up at most of the computers. But you have to get the HDMI into the computer. So you need an HDMI capture card, and I'm really big on a couple of the more expensive options, and we use ATEM minis and other things. But I, on a whim, ordered one through Amazon, threw it into my cart because it came up as a recommended. It's by this company, Fox Novo. FOXNOVO. It's all one word. It's a Chinese manufacturing. It's a USB HDMI capture. It says it's USB 2.0. And I was a little concerned, but hey, for the $17, the promo price, I was like, I'm going to try it. It is tiny. It's like the size of a, like a memory stick. And I have not seen a dropped frame at 1080p. I have had the camera on for 3+ hours multiple times. We've ordered extras and we just put them into all of our travel kits. And even though they're USB based, we have, I'm using one right now. As a matter of fact, I have the USB to USB-C adapter on the end of it. So it's USB-C or Mac friendly at that point. For $20, this is a great option. I don't know if I'd use it for a high stakes meeting. I'd probably go to our other options, but I'm pretty impressed. I've got, we've probably got a dozen.
So this is this is basically like my $150 Elgato Cam Link. Is that okay?
Yeah, I didn't mention Elgato, and I didn't mention. Hold on. Let me. This is a.
Okay.
Mirabox is the other one we use. And Magewell, we use a lot of Magewells, but Mirabox is an all USB-C one. And I've been using it quite a bit. And they're $100, which I thought was better than the Elgato one. And it's USB-C native. But yeah, okay. $20. And I haven't seen a single performance difference.
Okay. So my pro tip is not a professional one. It is a personal one. It's an organization called Kiwi Company. And it is a subscription-based, age-appropriate, hands-on project kits that are sent monthly to kids. So I originally purchased this 3-month subscription for my granddaughters, where they get a crate each month to do projects. And I'm serious. I had to renew it because they literally will bug the mailman to see if their kits are coming in. And my one daughter loves the STEM kind of approach, so her kit is based on science. My other granddaughter likes more designer decorating, so her kit is that type of project focus. Anyone, no matter what the age of the kid, they start at ages 2, I think, and they go up into the teen years. They're projects that children, young teens can get excited about and work on and look forward to each month. So I recommend KiwiCo.
I'm sorry. Yeah. How do you spell that? What is it?
KiwiCo. So KiwiCo.com, and we'll put the link in the notes. It's a great gift.
Got it. Wait, is that how you spell the fruit? Now I'm actually not sure.
It is how you spell the fruit. Kiwi.
Okay. But, kiwi. Yep. That type of kiwi. Mm-hmm. Not a... Never mind.
I don't know why it's called Kiwi, but just look it up kiwico.com.
Interesting. My my tech tip is a PowerPoint add-in that I had not previously known about. I don't know if you know about this, Troy. It's called Power User. Have you heard about this one?
I don't think so.
It's a whole.
What does it do?
Well, it does a lot. It's a whole suite of tools. They're you know, what they really want you to do is spend your whole time in this tab. So they include, you know, normal features in it, PowerPoint features, but then it adds a whole bunch of other tools. It's PC only. It does some similar things to BrightSlide and SlideWise, but it's got a couple, and so it's a duplicative there. But there are a couple of things that that I haven't seen elsewhere. The ones I'm thinking of are replace color. Which includes a checkbox for almost identical colors, which is fascinating. Clean and fix missing slide numbers, footers, and double blanks, 3D and other effects. You can like just take out all the, you know, junk, you know,
and strip out all the styling, PowerPoint styling. Oh, nice.
And then this is the one that I'm really going to hang on to it for in the future. It allows you to format multiple charts at once, including replacing fonts. Which what? Has always been a problem, because just because you change the font theme doesn't always mean that the fonts within charts. So if you have like 50 charts, very often you have to go into each individual chart and change things. What this does, it just goes through all of the charts and will change fonts for you along, and it'll change other things in the fonts if you want in the charts as well. So it's, I'm going to be honest, it feels a little clunky in terms of the UI and design, but it does some very interesting stuff. So
yeah, because you're using it, does that mean there's a Mac and a Windows version?
No, it's just Windows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just Windows.
See, I made an assumption.
You can get it at powerusersoftwares.com. So we'll put that in the show notes.
Save and send. Yeah, a lot. Oh, I like the replace colors though. Okay, no, I have not familiar with that one. Great discovery. All right, thanks, Nolan. Thanks, Sandy. Let's do some sign-offs and call it an episode. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. Our PowerPoint presentation blog is full of tips, tricks, and examples of presentation design. Find that at thepowerpointblog.com. And we do collaboration projects with other designers and internal MarCom departments for presentation and template needs.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Guild at presentationguild.org, and you'll find me on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as PPTWiz.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. You can check out my website, NolanHamesCreative.com, and also our blog, PresentYourStory.com, for lots of goodies and downloads and things like that. And that's the place to go to if you're looking for training or presentation or data design.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available from the Presentation Podcast website at thepresentationpodcast.com. Also, through the website, contact the show hosts with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated, and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.